Yeah, hi, my name is Craig Mayo. I'm a senior director of engineering at NetScout. I work on automation and AI. I've been with the company for 25 years, been in the technology space for about 35 years, working in various forms of AI and network telemetry. Is 5G something that's going to change the world? Is an interesting question, right? I mean, certainly any major technology tends to be transformative in some way. And 5G is definitely transformative. I think it's taken time to transform maybe at the rates people wanted. Some of that probably relates to monetization of it.
For RCR Wireless News, I'm Sean Kinney, and welcome to Will 5G Change the World? A podcast where we engage with a wide variety of industry experts to answer that important question. But before we get into the 5G discussion, we like to take a moment to get to know our guests a little bit better by asking three questions from the Proust questionnaire. Greg, you ready for those?
Sure.
Question number one, what is your current state of mind?
I would say trying to be engageful and actually just current moment mindfulness, listening to people, trying to really understand what folks are saying and just trying to take in the moment.
And question number two, who are your heroes in real life?
I think my heroes in real life are the folks that I've seen that are, doing everything they can to help those around them and make the place a better place than they left.
And question number three, which historical figure do you most identify with?
I mean, obviously, there's lots of figures, and you could pick many different aspects of that. I mean, these days, I've been thinking of kind of like Nikola Tesla. I think he had a great understanding of, frequencies and ways people didn't. And in the end, he really just wanted to provide, free energy and connectivity for everybody on the planet. So I thought that I think he's relevant. Certainly there's many, but that's who I've been thinking about lately.
So, Greg, in your introduction, you mentioned that you've been working with artificial intelligence for more than two decades in your current role with NetScout and previously. I'm really curious to get some historical perspective from you. Obviously, AI is having a kind of hype moment right now in the context of 5G, but much more generally, and we'll talk about that more later. But just tell us a little bit about your history with AI and anything that has been kind of a through line of your professional relationship with it.
Yeah, I mean, I went to school back in the 80s, 84, in college, WPI, which is Polytechnic Institute, and majored in artificial intelligence. And, even back then, a lot of the algorithms and what people were trying to do were kind of known. Like, they knew how they could start to do natural language processing. They knew how they could do image processing. They knew how they could build neural nets. And this is, this is the 80s. It's just, it took a while for, the compute speeds to be able to keep up with it and, and the algorithms to get better. But the goal was always, even back then, to be able to, inside of using these software techniques, have it replicate the kinds of tasks that we were doing. And, the thing that changes, the game, obviously, is, Moore's Law, where you get compute speeds now reaching, especially with the GPU approach, right, which is nothing special other than how they kind of decided to break up the actual processing units in it and parallelize it. Very cool for neural nets and that kind of thing. So it helped to accelerate that. You add that with the cloud plus access to, essentially the internet of the internet knowledge base, that accelerated at least, what you see in the news today around AGI or LLMs or those kinds of things. But AI techniques, again, machine learning is kind of a field of techniques that are more mathematical in nature. Many are time series based, whereas you start getting into the neural nets, which then evolve into LLMs, they get much more tagging based. And so but really, in our space, at least for me as an engineering software developer, they're all just part of a tool bag, right, that you use to ultimately deliver software to our end customers, which in the end, it doesn't matter what I use, right? It's like, if I could hammer a nail in, I could use you know, a superpower tool, or I could use a hammer, or I could use a rock. And if I can knock it in twice with the rock, then it does the same job, you know, the end user, you know what I mean? So AI is just a tool to deliver results to customers, in my mind. And it's lots of different techniques. You know, it's not like LLMs and AGI are the, you know, what you need to use for everything. So in our, you know, our space, we use a blend of different ones, algorithms in the end, right?
And we'll talk more about specifically what operators can do with artificial intelligence to sort of bolster their position with 5G. But before we get into that, I want to maybe take stock of where we are today, which roughly the midpoint of the 5G cycle, if you assume 10 years per generation. And, you know, it's pretty apparent that it hasn't really lived up to the hype in terms of delivering this sweeping digital transformation of industries that are going to create all these new revenue streams for operators. So I'm kind of curious, you know, one, do you agree with that take on where we are today? And can you maybe give us some commentary on why you think we find ourselves where we are?
I mean, I think it's a fair assessment. I think it's accurate. I don't think there's anything hidden about that. I mean, if you look at, you know, the general consumer almost had enough bandwidth, I could watch my favorite video on LTE, especially with like expanded LTE. I can get on and pretty much get pretty good, you know, cell phone experience. Now, if you're gaming, that's different. You know, certainly home internet, you know, you need bigger things. Really, where 5G started to, you know, want to expand is, you know, all the different areas, and then having mass connectivity, right? Machine to machine communication, right? That's where you start getting to, I think, where it's getting more used, right? And certainly you have more connected cars now, and it's coming. You know, there's always been some aspect of connected cars, but I think, you know, the spectrum has been utilized pretty well from what I can see across the carriers. It's, you know, I mean, the industry themselves, like if you look at what they're selling to, if it's energy and stuff like that, you know, or the power grids, is it the government paying for it or whatnot, right? The mass consumer market isn't going to be paying for it, right? It's not going to be me and you buying more video games or stuff online. It's going to be industrial, which is either going to be government, healthcare, right? Because when you start talking about the connected everything, that starts to fall into even governmental, right? All the power grids, all the stuff. But that's where mass connectivity is when 5G really starts to, I think, you know, take off. You know, certainly the slicing capabilities, you know, the obvious ones that come out are gaming, right? Is probably the easiest one to monetize, because you can start setting up gaming centers, right? Where you, you know, have much more immersive experience, higher bandwidth, right? So that's certainly always seems to be the one that comes to the top when I look at, you know, what's different in the news and whatnot. And then, you know, again, you get into the healthcare and you get into these other ones where the benefits are awesome. It's just, it's not high profit because it's, you know, healthcare and transportation and things like that. So that makes it difficult, I think. I don't know. That's my own personal assessment from what I can tell.
Yeah. I want to unpack what you said there a little bit. And I never mean to go out of my way to knock the operators that have been deploying 5G, because enhanced mobile broadband, it is just that. It is enhanced. It is better than what was delivered with 4G. And from the internal facing perspective, it is a more efficient system for transmitting capacity over.
No, it's awesome. I can be on Waze and I'm getting 200 megs and I'm humming along. But I didn't pay anything more for it. You know what I mean? That didn't help monetize it. It's great for me.
And then so your point around, you know, massive connectivity of things, that's kind of what is next, is we've got the enhanced mobile broadband use case pretty well delivered. So now we got to get on to ultra reliable, low latency communications, massive machine type communications, things that are super meaningful for enterprise users at a global scale. But I guess based on the past 5 years, are you hopeful for the next 5 years? You also mentioned, you know, the difficulty of selling into some of these verticals, whether that's developing expertise to actually sell effectively, or if it's the margin associated with something like healthcare. But What do you think? Do you think we can see sort of a comeback story here in the next 4 or 5 years?
Well, I mean, I think it's inevitable, right? I mean, 5G will be the platform for delivery of these services. So it's just, is it slower than we expected? Yes. Will it come? Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, it's not like 6G is going to bring more different stuff, right? I mean, the architecture of 5G is sound enough. I mean, the networks that are being built seem pretty really good, right? You know, and then they have the flexibility. Architecture is all good. So I can't see why it wouldn't be happening. And, you know, as you get, you know, combined with AI systems needing more connectivity, more speeds, I think it's an inevitability for sure.
So one thing that speaks to this whole idea of operators using 5G to better monetize enterprise is transition to standalone, then leveraging that cloud core to do cross-domain network slicing. And all that rolls back up to being able to confidently guarantee the performance of that slice so that you can sell it and, you know, monetize it. And I guess I'm wanting to tap into some of your expertise with NetScout in terms of how you actually do this, how you make this virtually partitioned slice that cuts across your different network domains and is tuned to the needs of a specific enterprise business. How do operators deliver that against very stringent service level agreements?
Well, you asked how do operators do it and how do we do it? So you asked two questions. I mean, the whole point of 5G and how do operators do it is the specifications literally say, okay, to set up slices, the NSSF has to do this, you have to register with this, and there's a complete sequence of control plane signaling that takes place for enrollment, registration, authentication, right? All of that. And then that gets combined into the UPF so that the proper user plane bearers are set up, attuned to each slice. I mean, you know, slicing is not dramatically different than the concept of just QoS levels, right? Basically, back in the day, Cisco routers like, yep, oh, we have rules so that these things get these, you know, priorities and whatnot. Slicing is the same thing. It's just in 5G, it's nicely architected. And I think, you know, having it, monetizing it are two different things. You can have three slices, but if they're not making lots of revenue, it doesn't matter. You can have one slice. So I think, you know, everybody, you know, in the end, everybody wants it both fast and low latency, right? That's the thing. It's like, we have ones for, you know, super low latency and, you know, really high throughput. It's like, well, of course we want both in the end. everyone wants it super fast and high throughput. It's just the way, again, that, you know, you have the physics involved, so you can't just give everybody those speeds. So, you know, and then how do we do it? I mean, we have to basically, you know, do have all the same logic as the infrastructure NEMGEAR does. We have to understand all the packet flows to say, yep, this was a registration, this was for this slice. So we're almost like a participant in the network infrastructure across the different functions, because we have to stitch together, oh, here's N1 to N11 to then this, and we stitch all that stuff together.
This episode of Will 5G Change the World is presented in partnership with NetScout. NetScout provides the power of seamless visibility into the performance, availability, and security risks across any network, any data center, any cloud, 5G, and more. Learn more at netscout.com. Now let's get back to our conversation with Greg. I wanted to bring this back to AI, but in the context of these other technology transformations that operators are having to address. I guess the big ones I mentioned, transition to 5G standalone, cloud native core, and all of the software development expertise that comes with trying to embrace cloud native computing, operating and technological principles. We're also seeing a lot of traction around RAN disaggregation, whether that's open RAN as in compliant with O-RAN Alliance standards, or whether that's virtualized RAN or cloud RAN, or you know, the whole litany of buzzwords there. Now we've got AI. So this is at the top of everybody's strategic priority list. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, does this further complicate what operators were already doing, or is AI something that they can leverage to kind of tie everything together and make it a little more elegant, a little more easy to consume for their users, and a little more manageable for themselves?
Well, I mean, there's certainly what can the operators do with AI to help themselves, and then there's also what does AI do to their business via their consumers. I mean, just like the rest of us, AI is going to give them a tool set that lets them automate at scale, right? I mean, so certainly the areas of automation that we play in would be automated, you know, data transformation, automation in root cause analysis, incident management and response, right? That whole closed loop system becomes further enabled by having AI, right? Because it has a much more powerful engine to do all of the steps of saying, go do this, 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 this. That's just the monitoring and the telemetry of it, right? So that's, you know, NetScout lives in the land of telemetry. And so, but then these operators are obviously going to reuse that, you know, as part of NWDAF feedback. You know, you could think of us as kind of an input into an NWDAF system, right? Where we've done analytics, we've provided input to that. Now they'll have more AI that sits there and says, oh, now we need to go change the UPF settings over here. Now you have AI not just helping with detection and incidents, but actually mitigation, right? That's the obvious next steps for these guys, you know, and then eventually you get to the dark knock, right? It's pretty much just running itself. That's where it goes to. How long is, you know, the dark knock is the, you know, where people are headed. How long? Hard to say, you know, things sometimes go faster than you think. It can be 2 years, 5 years, but that's where operators want to get to, right? Lights out, it's down in a vault.
You mentioned closed loop automation there. I wanted to ask a quick follow-up. You know, you made the point AI is not new. We maybe now have the silicon and compute power to do AI more effectively at a much larger scale, but operators have automated lots of operational processes within their networks, but so many that we see are open loop, not closed loop. So there's still that one kind of sticky point of a manual interaction with whatever the process is. How do you make that move from an open loop to closed loop? Is it more so a technological problem, or is it maybe more of a cultural issue, a workforce issue, something about conservative organizations struggling to take their hands off the wheel, even though they probably could?
It's the latter. It's cultural, right? Because think of it like this. At this point, the generative AI systems that are coming out and growing as we speak, right? As we speak, these AGI systems are growing. So they'll do as good a job. It's trusting the answer. And in the past, you know, I've been in the monitoring space for a long time. We've always tried to do our best to get, you know, the data in the right form so that people can make intelligent decisions and, you know, do certain kinds of alerting and certain kinds of diagnostics. And, you know, you can only get it so far. That leap now that you can get once you start getting into some full generative AI loops is fairly massive. It's a cultural leap, but people are making that cultural leap already. They're trusting it to, you know, to do other things for them. So it'll be easy. They're already, you know, ChatGPT is integrating in everybody's life or whatever LLM they use, yes?
And then another follow-up on observability or visibility of network telemetry. It seems like something that operators to an extent struggle with, particularly around unifying their mechanism for observability across all of their networking domains. But when you start to think about layering AI into all of this and moving closer toward closed loop automation, what does that do to your visibility strategy? It seems like now you've got to monitor the data flows that go into the AI solution and then also monitor how that AI solution is behaving based off of its inputs. But just talk us through that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge area. So, I mean, for us, you know, at NetScout, if you look at it, you know, we have, you know, we've always been a telemetry company, right? At being able to have at least the best source of data packet of interactions, right? So anything that has to talk to anything else goes along this path, which gives us at DPI at scale a very nice data source. And we've done wonderful things with it. Now, as you look at these AI ecosystems, right? So you have these AI ops worlds, the SecOps world. These are now, you know, all our big customers and big companies, whether it's enterprise service provider, 5G, it doesn't matter, are implementing AI ops systems, SecOps systems. And network telemetry is a huge part of it, right? Not the whole part. They have, you know, server logs, server agents, all these different telemetry. But one of the final pieces in that telemetry is the network telemetry of the interactions as it relates to an application or a service or a slice or whatnot. And so, you know, for us, we've been focusing now on really getting that DPI to AI in, on a silver platter for these AI ecosystems. So it's like all of, and that takes us to run AI to do that. You know what I mean? So like we're using AI to feed AI, and that's what, you know, these transformation sequences do in data science. They're pipelines, right? You got to start with raw data, you mine it, then you have to classify it, label it, then you transform it, you extract features, then you put it into a learning model. You know, there's a kind of a chain of things that happen there. And, you know, for us, we are a very key piece of being able to take the rawest form of everything. I mean, you want to talk about AI, you know, its brain talks packets, you know, our brains talk, you know, whatever, our neural synapses, but everything talks to each other with IP packets.
I have a follow-up there, and I might phrase it poorly, so excuse me in advance, but when we think about all of the data that an AI needs to function properly, kind of regardless of the use case or the business outcome it's being deployed in service of, how does NetScout think about the context of the data that's necessary to really drive decision-making? I kind of try to think about it as data and context is what you need to get a knowledge out of the other side. But how do you think about structuring context and applying it to data?
I mean, we are lucky because we have a fairly small language model, right? We don't need large language model to understand all of the network telemetry, even across the whole internet of everything, because there's a very nice packet structure of layers and things embedded in the layers that you can build a very good metadata. That's been our bread and butter of adaptive service intelligence, ASI, is a modeling for these interactions, regardless of domain, service provider, vertical, right? That's been something that our patented intellectual property. So that just benefits us here. It's just, again, as playing nice in the sandbox of AI ops ecosystems, we need to take all of that and just tie it in a bow so that it's super simple, because these ecosystems are trying to bundle together different sources of information and it gets difficult for them. So if we can make ours very easy to consume, because we can have a fire hose if people want, right? I could send you a billion DNS records every 5 minutes if you want. And we have that. It's like, okay, how about instead of that, maybe I send you 10 million, but we've applied some intelligence to that to tell you there's this many this many that. And so that lets us be a member of the data transformation pipeline. And it's an important member because we can, the closer you can do the work to source, right, the better the rest of the pipeline goes, right? The more you do work towards the end, adds complexity and bloat. So, you know, NetScout certainly, you know, has always been about, you know, analytics close to the source being, our ISNGs and now our new products coming out, AI sensors.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you for that explanation, Greg. And then I guess to get back to the premise of the show, 5G is something that you could reasonably think would change the world. You know, I'm curious what you would maybe look to know when it's happening, if it's happening. I think if I reflect on the catalog of the show a lot of it is around productivity gains or GDP or you know, just really big, bold data sets that would be very convincing, but maybe loses some of the subtlety. But just from your perspective, from NetScout's perspective, what kind of indicators would suggest to you that things are turning around and that 5G really is emerging as a connectivity medium and an umbrella for a lot of other solutions that rely on cellular that are really having an impact broadly?
I mean, that's a fairly vast question. I mean, obviously, again, you know, changing the world is a big statement, right? Because even this, let's fast forward 15 years from now, you think people are going to look back and say it was 5G that changed the world, or it was AI this year? They're going to say AI. They're not even going to remember what 5G was, probably. You know what I mean? So it can, you know, it's going to impact the world. It's part of the changing of the world. But 20 years from now, I don't think you're going to look back and go, wow, 5G really changed the world. You're going to look back and go, wow, you remember when LLMs came out and ChatGPT? That changed the world. So it's going to impact the world. It's going to help elevate connectivity. It will bring new business opportunities, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, remembered in the history books as a game changer. But impact, you know, but things, you know, the world moves so fast, so change of any sort, you know, is certainly still highly impactful.
I think that's exactly right. It's the rare guest that answers the question, will 5G change the world? Say, no, not really. But I do think that that is exactly right. It will incrementally help progress a lot of things. But 20 years from now, we'll be studying it in elementary school? No, of course not.
It's still, what's the definition of change the world? It already is changing the world for certain people.
Excellent, Greg. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show, have this conversation with me, and share your perspective with our audience.
Excellent. Well, thank you for having me.